I wanted to explore a topic which is a very central topic in Hilchos Yontif, and it lies as the basis of a very significant halacha that we're familiar with. But the principle has very, very broad applications in Hilchos Yontif. Moram Sochem, Bem Vavam Edbeis, Itmar. A person that baked bread, he baked a cake on Yontif, and his intention, though, was not to use it for Yontif. His intention was to use it for the day after Yontif. That would be equally true in our situation if we bake from the first day Yontif to the second day Yontif. It's Rav Chisda Amar Leika. Rav Chisda said that such a person would get Malchus. He violated the Yisra of Loisasa Malocha, that you're not allowed to do Malocha. He violated the law, because the license to cook for Yontif is limited to those things which are meant for Yontif. If I mean it for after Yontif use, so that's it. It's not permissible. Rabbi Omar ain't a loika. Rabbi says one is not loika. One doesn't get Malchus. Now, it's not that Rava says that the Komalecha Savoyed Leisasu of Yontif could not conceivably have Malchus to it. We'll see in a moment. But for a rather outside reason. Rav Chisda Amar Leika. Rav Chisda says that we are Leika. Now, one of the issues when we say, Achar, Asher Yeochel Luchol Nefesh, Hu Levado Ye Yoseh Luchem in Parshas Boy, that Yeochel Nefesh is permissible, is what probability does there have to be for what probability does there have to be that it's going to be used for Yontif to make it mutter? We're not going to postulate that it has to be 100%, that I can only make something if I'm 100% sure I'm going to use it. Let's say I'm not sure if I'm going to eat one egg or two eggs. I didn't decide before the meal. So we're not going to say that I can't cook two eggs when there's quite a reasonable chance I'm going to eat two eggs. So how far does that go, that the flexibility here in terms of how likely it has to be used? So that's the issue that Rabba and Rav Chisda debate. Rav Chisda Amar Leika Le'Amin Hole Mekloy Le'Orchim Chozi Le. Let's start with Rabba and we'll go backwards. Rabba Omar ain't a loka. Why doesn't he get Malchus? He baked his bread on Yontif and he intended it for it to be used the day after Yontif. I'm reading Hoyol, because we say Hoyol, meaning Hoyol and Mekloy Orchem. Meaning that even though he intends to use this bread after Yontif, but nothing closes out the possibility that it would be used on Yontif. Let's say a guest came unexpectedly and knocked on his door. So he take it and give it to him. So consequently, 10 guests would come and knock on the door, he would give it to them. So he says, so there is always the possibility that it will still be used for Yontif. If there's the possibility that it will be used for Yontif, then he does not violate the law. It would not be Malchus. We're not saying he has license to do it. It's generally understood that midrabbanan, one is not allowed to do such a thing. But midraisa, it's mutter, even if it's a far-fetched use. So now we'll go backwards. Let's go back really to Rav Chisda. So Rav Chisda, Amar Loika Lo Yamin and Hoyle Bekloy Le Yorchem. We are not concerned with the possibility that guests may come, and therefore he violates Lisasa Komalocha of Yontif. So Rav Chisda says we need a real possibility that this is going to be used. A far-fetched possibility that it's going to be used does not suffice to allow it to be made on Yontif. So this is a machlokes. Now we're going to see this machlokes has very far-reaching implications. In their attempts to bring proof to their respective positions, so Gemara says the following. So Rabba said to Rav Chisda, you say that a remote possibility that it might be used does not suffice to remove the love, and one still violates a love. So if that's the case, he says, L'didoch na'amrit lo'yamin and hayo. So you'd say that's because we don't say hayo. Heich oifen miyontif l'shabbos. So how does one cook from yontif l'shabbos? So Rav Chisda answered him, like any normal Jew would answer, when we cook miyontif l'shabbos, omalei mishomei ruvei tavshimen. We make an Erev Tavshimen, we don't just cook from Shabbos from yontif till Shabbos. We make an Erev Tavshimen before we do so. So, but then the Gemara, but that begs the question. You're telling me, Rav Chisda, that I fully violate the law because I intend to use this food tomorrow. And the fact that I may wind up using it today does not ameliorate the law. The Erev Tavshilin is not a halacha deraisa, it's a rabbinic invention. So if the Rabbanon created Erev Tavshilin, how could that conceivably undo the lav of Leisasa Malacha, of cooking for tomorrow? So what type of answer are you giving me? That Erev Tavshilin, that itself deserves to be questioned. So how could Erev Tavshilin conceivably work? Right. The Rabbanon don't undo Isurei Deraisa. Now it means, according to Rabba, the notion of the Erev Tavshilin is built on the principle of Hayil. Hoel Mikloy Orchem. It always, when I come to this Gemara, it rings very, very true in my ears. Because I always come back when, long ago, just to be long ago, I'm 30 years already living in Baruch Hashem, 29 years I'm living in Kew Garden Hills already, going on 30. But before then, I lived in Kew Gardens, and it was the dead of winter, and I was Lech Benjamin to about 4:10 in the afternoon, and the family was younger and smaller at those years, so, you know, the Rebbetzin did not cook in abundance, you know, and it's 10 minutes after Lech Benjamin, about at 4:20, there's a knock on my door. Rather surprising, I'm not expecting anyone to come for Shabbos. I open up the door, and there's one of my relatives standing at the door, in the doorway. They were on the way back from London, they were delayed. So they made sure to get off the plane the first. They couldn't make it back to Brooklyn where they lived. And one thing, if you live in this part of town, you live close to the airport. So they raced to my house, and 10 minutes before Shkia, they knocked at the door. So, you know, the Rebbetzin had to run, and whatever, throw in some extra food. It was, you know, it's a hoil of a cloy orchan. One never knows when someone knocks on the door, and you have to feed them. So it could happen on Yontif too. You know, I teased the Chassidim about this, my Chassidish friends. I say, without the Litvakis, this year you couldn't operate. You need the Litvakis to misnag them. I said, why? I said, listen, on the seventh day of Yontif, you're going to cook Nedlach for Achron Shal Pesach. But the whole heter, according to Rabba, is because of Hoyle, because he might use them today. I said, but you guys wouldn't need the Knedlach on the seventh day of Yontif, so what's the heter? The whole heter is because maybe some litvak like me is going to knock on the door and you'll have to give me a meal, so for me you'd give it, you know. So this is the question that Rabba raised, that if you don't agree with me and you say that a far-fetched possibility of use does not suffice to meet the bar for tzorach yontif, then what is the heter for Erev Tavshilin? So Rav Chisda comes back with an answer. He says, Mid oraisa tzorchi Shabbos nasa b'yontif. Mid oraisa on yontif, you can cook for Shabbos. Rabbanon who did gozru bay, and the Rabbanon prohibited it, gzeiro shem yom ro'ofen b'yontif, af l'chol. The people who still think that you can cook for after yontif use, they won't lock in that Shabbos is special. They're giving the tzrichur abonah eruv tavshilin islay hakeiro. since the Rabbanon demanded the Erev Tov Shilin, that's an announcement that this is a special license. It's not free license to cook for whatever you want. So Rashi explains, B'dorayis etzorchi Shabbos nasa b'yantu v'tichsiv, ach ashayei ochel l'chol nefesh, b'shabbos v'yantiv chodek u'dushahi. They both have, well, they're one aspect of Kedusha. Your Tavayu Shabbos Ikru, both are called Shabbos. As we know, in the parsha of the Sfira Sa'ima, for example, we have in Mochros HaShabbos. And Shabbos means Yontif in that regard. Shabbos Hilochem B'chom Moshvosechem, right, in terms of Yom Kippur. Yontif is also called Shabbos. So therefore, so in effect, what he's stating is the fact that Shabbos and Yom Tov are both called Shabbos and Yom Tov are both called Shabbos, and it's like one block of Kedusha. It's a 48-hour long Shabbos. But strangely enough, within this Shabbos, there are differing halachos. On the first day of the Shabbos, you can cook. And on the second day, as part of the Shabbos, you can't cook. But it's one block of Kedusha. It's a little consistent also with the notion that we mentioned previously, that the Shabbosan of Yontif comes from the Shabbosan of Shabbos. It's one mitzvah. In effect, and as Rebbeinu Simcha says, without the Shabbos and the mitzvah saseh of Shabbos, there could be no mitzvah saseh of Shabbos and on Yom Tov. The two are bound, inextricably intertwined with each other. So that fits very, very much with this step in the Gemara. So we have two different possibilities to explain the Erev Tov Shilin. We have the possibility that Tzorchei Shabbos and Asim B'Yom Tov. We have the possibility that Hoyle Mekloy Orchim, that maybe Orchim will come. Now, if we examine Rabbah carefully, Rabbah does not dispute the fact. You know, we have machlokas in Shas sometimes of a particular lav is subject to Malkus or not. We have many different reasons for it. A lav Shein Bo Maisa, for example. A lav which one violates without doing an action. So, does one get Malkus for such a lav? That's debated in Shas. A lav that's neaten Lazarus Mises Besdin. A lav Shabaklolus. A lav which is a very general type of lav. So, there are many reasons that there are lavim in the Torah which don't, in fact, wind up getting Malkus. There are, as we know, 365 lois assays in the Torah. And yet the Rambam counts 166. Which are subject to Malkus. So that means the other 199 are not subject to Malkus. And we have 199 lav in the Torah that are not subject to Malkus altogether. 166 are. Now, if we examine Rabbah carefully, Rabbah does not dispute Rav Chisda that there's no Malkus for Yom Tov. He said there's no Malkus for Yom Tov because of Hayom. Now, suppose we would arrive at a situation where there isn't toil. Now, you say that's pretty far-fetched. Well, how could it be that there could be no possibility, even if on Mars, somebody could drop in on me? It's more remote than I guessed here, but it could happen. But what happens if the time that I bake the bread is at the very end of Yom Tov? So, it's not roy to be used until after Yom Tov. But the bishul, the afiyah, is taking place on Yom Tov, near the very end of Yom Tov. So I violate bishul, but I don't have the possibility of your afiyah. I don't have the possibility of using it. It's not ready till the night time. So there I can have violated, I have done the malacha. There's no hoel because it could not conceive be used. It could not conceivably be used in the daytime. So then Rabbah would also agree with Rav Chisda that is Malkus. It's just normally when you're Eifem, Yom Tov L'chol, in most situations, there's not going to be Malkus. But that doesn't mean there could never be malchus. They're not disputing the fact that the Leisasa Malach Yontif could have malchus. Just Rava says in most cases it's not going to have malchus. Now, if we, most of the poskim, paskim like Rav, but not all, there are some rishonim, in fact, most poskim say that the license for Erev Tav Shilin is Hoyle. There's a very small number, the Ritzbo, one or two others, that learn that Tzorch HaShabbos Nasim Yontab is the license for Erev Tav Shilin. But that's the exception, the rare exception in Psak Halacha rather than the rule. Now, what stems from that is the following, that the license then of Erev Tav Shilin has to, in fact, be cognizant of the concept of Hoyle, which means if I cook at such time, let's say I have a blech, so Erev Shabbos, I can come right before Lich Benchen, put a pot of food on the fire, as long as there's a blech, and leave it there, and I'll eat it tomorrow. And I won't violate anything. There's no iser in the food cooking on Shabbos, right? It's the notion of Beshamai. Right? Beshamai has a notion that you need to have Shvisas Kalim. Your Kalim are involved in the doing of a Malach on Shabbos, that's already prohibited. But we don't have a problem with that. According to Beis Hillel, there's no dinner of Shvisas Kalim. The question is, if am I doing an action on Shabbos? If I don't do an action on Shabbos, despite the fact that the food is cooking on Shabbos, I don't violate Bishul. So if I put up the food 5 minutes before Shabbos, and I won't be ready till midnight, and I'll eat it tomorrow, I didn't do anything wrong. We don't normally recommend doing such a thing, for a very simple reason. There was a big goyim in this city. He died in 1973. His name was Rav Yosef Elio Henkin. A world-class goyim. And he wrote in his sefer, Eidus Yisrael, that we should be very particular to see that the food is fully cooked before Shabbos begins. Why, he said, because it's common practice in today's world with our blechs that we move the food around on the blech. We don't just leave the pots in one place. And consequently, if I move the pot from a cooler place to a warmer place, or even more subtly, you know, I told my talmidim many times, let me tell you the fastest way to be Mechal Shabbos. No effort required, and you won't even realize you're Mechal Shabbos. You know, you come home, and you're curious what your mother cooked for Shabbos Friday night. So you go into the kitchen, and you pick up the pots, and you look in this one, you look in that one, you look in the next one, and that's it. You know, what do you do? If one of those pots, the food was not yet finished cooking, so when you open it up, there would be less heat would gather in that pot. When you close that pot, you're going to intensify the heat that it's going to be maintained in that pot. So now the bishul will take place a little bit faster because you closed it again. I said, here you are. You came home, your curiosity got the best of you, and before you made kiddush, you were mechal Shabbos already, chalila. Very easy way. So Rav Henkin Zatzal wrote that for that reason, that we could remove the pots around, if something's not fully cooked, are very liable to be Mechal Shabbos. So I tell people, if you wind up in that situation, you're not stuck getting home and you got home just before Shabbos, you're on the road and you ran in someplace, you put up something to cook, it's not going to be cooked before Shabbos, just decide, don't touch it, don't move it, leave it alone. Shabbos morning, come take it off and eat it. But Friday night, don't touch, leave it alone. So we need to be cognizant, though. So on Shabbos, on a normal Friday night, if I have a blech mitzad din, there's no problem with putting up the food right before Shabbos. But if it's a Friday night leading into Yontif, it doesn't wash, because I did the Maisa Bishul on Yontif, and it's not going to be ready to be eaten until the night time. So there was no possibility of Hoyle. If a guest knocked on the door, the food wasn't edible today. So there's no license for Erev Tav Shilin. So the corollary that we draw from this is the Magen Avraham, that we have to put up the food early enough that we have to put up the food early enough that it would be edible on Yom Tov. And as Tosis already notes, Domer in Yom Tov mechon l'Shabbos. Yamer d'hoyal hechon mashkachas lot in Yom Tov mechon l'Shabbos. When would it be? Because you're always allowed. So v'hashto mashkachas lot somach l'shkiyas achamak at a precious. If it's at the very, very end of the day, then there would be no license for hoyal. So what we could, we use in the license of Erev Tavshilin, so we have to make sure that the food is edible already, is cooked food before Shabbos. Now, in Hilchos Shabbos, we have a principle that how do we determine what's considered edible or not? So, in Hilchos Shabbos, we cite the rule that it has to reach Michael Ben Drusoy. Right? Means that it's at the lowest level, the first level of edibility is a cooked food. If it reached that level, so if somebody knocked on the door, I could feed it to him. So Halacha L'maisa, the Prima Gadim says that it means that it has to be half-cooked. And that's what I wrote in my Sefer. There is, in the Mishnah Berurah, it says a third cooked, quotes the Prima Gadim, but there is no such Prima Gadim. The Prima Gadim is in Hilchos Shabbos and says half-cooked. So it's probably a typo in the Mishnah Berurah. And the reason that the Prima Gadim wrote a half is a very simple thing. In Hilchos Shabbos, there's a machlokes if it's a half or a third. So we say preferably it should be a half, but if I didn't have a blech and it was a third cooked, it's also fine. But in Hilchos Yontif, we're dealing with an Issa Deraisa. If it didn't reach the point of Michael Ben Drusoy, then I violated Lesasa Moloch on Yontif. So therefore, in a Deraisa Dikamachleikas, I have to be Machmer like the Sheet of a half, and that's what the Prima Gadim does right. The Prima Gadim is, in fact, in Hilchos Shabbos. There is no such Prima Gadim in Hilchos Yontif at all. It talks about it. So this is a significant aspect of Erev Tavshilin that we need to realize, that whatever we're going to do, we have to do it early enough in the day on Erev Shabbos that it's going to be edible, at least half-cooked, before Shkiyas HaChama comes. Now it's interesting, we have this halacha as another halacha which is a corollary of it. And at the beginning of the halachas of Erev Tavshilin, the Chofetz Chaim quotes a minuk. And the Rav Shulchan Aruch spells it out more at length, that on the day of an Erev Tavshilin, on the Friday of an Erev Tavshilin, surprisingly, they were noyeg to daven early, even before Shkiyas HaChama, they daven Marv. Like we do on a regular Shabbos, we have early Shabbos. They made early Shabbos on an Erev Tavshilin day. And what was the reason for this? Because if people would daven early, they would have to eat early. If you have to eat early, you'd have to cook early. So you wouldn't be able to start putting up your food too late in the day, because then you're not going to be able to eat, and you're going to put up the food certainly before you went to shul, and you want to make sure it's edible when you get home from shul. So Mameila, they created a minhag to daven early on that day, on an Erev Tavshilin day, even if it's Yon, which is Yontif, but nevertheless they made a minhag so that people would do the malacha early. Now this parallels, it's interesting, Doruch HaShulchan writes something which is so axiomatic in our time, and yet in the time of the time of Doruch HaShulchan was very, very different. We have early Shabbos in the summertime. In the wintertime, who thinks about making early Shabbos? You know, who wants to daven at Plag HaMincha in December? I mean, it's early enough when Shabbos is 4:10. So I want to move it back to 3:30 to be in shul. Doruch HaShulchan writes that until in his day, in his lifetime, the minhag in Klal Yisrael in Russia changed. Until his door, they davened Baruch Hu, Friday night, was before Shkiyas HaChama. That was the norm in Eastern Europe. Baruch Hu of Marv, of Leil Shabbos, was before the sunset. He said, why? He said, because even the late comers came to shul by Baruch Hu. As late as you're going to come, but by Baruch Hu, they all showed up. If they got there by Baruch Hu, so that means they finished all the malacha in the house already before they came. So Mameila was a means of preventing Chilul Shabbos. And he says it's concerned with the fact in his day they changed the style of tefillah to the style that we have today, that they daven mincha right before sunset, and we daven Kabbalah Shabbos really after sunset, and Baruch was afterwards. So he says he's concerned for how much Chilul Shabbos is going to take place with people rushing at the last minute. I mean, you know, it's one of the brachas in having an Eruv. You know, when you think back to earlier years when there wasn't an Eruv, you know, to even running into shul shortly after Shkia with a box of matzahs for the Shalosh Shudas, you know. They had to bring a box of matzah for Shalosh Shudas for Shabbos to shul, you know. They were a little late in getting there, but the matzahs came along with them. So this is the inyan that we have to be careful about, to cook early enough in the day that the food will be edible still before Shkia Sacham.
I've heard that if the case that we're discussing now is when the first day of Yom Tov is going to Shabbos, but if it's the second day of Yom Tov...
You should know a very interesting thing. There's a general klal in Hilchus Yom Tov that don't do things on the second day Yom Tov any differently than the first. Even though we know clearly what the calendar is, we know our first day of Yom Tov is actually the first day of Yom Tov, but the halacha does not allow us to be any more meikel on Yom Tov Sheni based on the fact that it's Yom Tov Sheni, it's only with the Rabbanon. That cheshbon is disallowed in halacha. It's relevant only in two halachas, it's relevant. And those are specifically articulated by Chazal. It was relevant to the burial of the dead. Now, we, you know, live in a different age. Rav Moshe was pushed very, very strongly to do away with all the levayos on Yom Tov. Rav Moshe did not want them to take place. And consequently, it's only in older kehillas, or chassidish kehillas, or older kehillas, that they still take place. In Broyers, I understand that there could be a levaya on Yom Tov. I know in Satmar and Ravina and chassidish kehillas it takes place. And maybe even in the Hasidic context or the Yekish context, perhaps it even makes sense or made sense. Rav Moshe had a very simple concern. He said, we don't live in a frum age. We live that in every family there are some frum people and there's a lot of not frum people. So we're going to have a levaya on Yom Tov and a guy dies. So the halacha is, so who's allowed to go with the guy? Just a few of the immediate aveilim are allowed to go with him. No one else is allowed to go to the cemetery. I remember Lo Aleinu, there was a kid that ran into the street, I think, on Erev Yom Tov, or Yom Tov, that was killed by a car in Williamsburg. So the levaya was, I think, the next day. I remember looking out the window, and there it was out across from the Vina Yeshiva, and there it was, the hearse came, and they went off. But there's no heter for anyone, and that's only Ayidei Akum. There's no heter for Chilul Shabbos and Chilul Yom Tov. And consequently, and in this demographics that exist in the United States, that there'll be non from relatives that'll drive to the chasana to the levaya too. So Rav Moshe did not want it. He saw obviously Rav Moshe lived in the Lower East Side. He probably saw a little bit too much chilul Yom Tov associated with these things, and he said ad kan. And the truth is, he struggles mightily to make everything in the sugya consistent with his psak. Which is not so simple, in fact, but to the largest extent, in our kehillas, because of Rav Moshe, we do not have levayas on Yom Tov for that reason, because of the, you know, the connected Chilul Shabbos that goes with it.
Does it help that we have the refrigeration process?
Oh, so that's what I meant to say. That's why. That's exactly the point. Rav Moshe's point was, he said, listen, Chazal, he said, would not even matter Gavayas and Yom Tov except for the Nivul HaMeis. And now that we have refrigeration, we don't have it. I mean, Lo Aleinu, there was someone that died 4 or 5 years ago on the first day Shavuos. It was 90 degrees that day. He died in the house. So I came there, I got home after being up a whole night, I made Kiddush, and I got a little bit of sleep, and then there was somebody knocking on the door, I go out, and all I know, someone passed away. So it was impossible to wait 2 days to leave the person in the house. I mean, the Nivul HaMeis would have been awesome. So I went and I got someone from the Chevra, Kedisha, and they walked up to Schwartz on Queens Boulevard, and they came down with a, they didn't come with a hearse, which is very good, they came with a station wagon, and nobody, and it was midday, the first day Shavuos, you know, nobody was in the street at that time. Either the people had, some people were still sleeping, and others were sitting down to the meal, but the streets were deserted. And they thought it was absolutely necessary for that reason. But in the time of the Gemara, they were matter because of the Nivul HaMeis, because they didn't have refrigeration. That's what the Moshe writes.
So somebody has to accompany the mace that's from, no?
Where? They didn't, did not. They
no?
Went, no. No, there was no burial.
There was no Shmira
on the... Shmira is not Me'ikra the dinner nowadays. In other words, the Shmira that we have, the dinner of Shmira, is only if there's a concern that the body may be violated by rodents, whatever. That's when they insisted on Shmira. In the contemporary situation that they're secured from rodents, Me'ikra the dinner is only no Shmira. The Shmira is a dinner of covet. The payday that we have is to give covet ames. Sort of, I guess, in a little bit, the Rambam writes that next to the Migdash, you have to put Shomrim. Now, Shomrim and the Migdash were not only for the purposes of security. Shomrim and the Migdash were in need of covet. Where the Melech is, there's an honor guard around him. That's just part of the covet of the Melech. So there's a, you know, Shmira for a person is also, for a Nifter, is in need of covet. Well, whatever, I don't listen, that's a different child for now. There are two different possibilities. How there's a way for a Yid to do it, there's a way for a Goy to do it, there are different possibilities. I don't want to get into the, you know, the Chevra Kedisha probably does what it has to do, which are the ones that are possible for it to do. The other thing that Chazal allowed on Yom Tov Sheni was there are certain limitations of a person that has a very minor ailment of taking medicine on Shabbos and Yom Tov. That lapses on Yom Tov Sheni. On Yom Tov Sheni, they did not, I guess they realized, a person already to go 2 days and to be uncomfortable would be a little too much. So on Yom Tov Sheni, they allowed people to take medicines for minor ailments. But those are the only two things where we're mechalek between Yom Tov Rishon and Yom Tov Sheni. That's if you noted, in my sefer I discussed the fact, there's a very interesting practice of the Chacham Tzvi. And I gave a spin to it because I did not think that the conventional understanding of it is correct. There's this huge controversy about, always has been, about smoking on Yom Tov. It's appropriate, it's inappropriate. I mean, it's certainly not the wisest course of action to smoke. That's, you know, one doesn't have to be blessed to be a genius to figure that out. But in earlier times, people did not realize anything was dangerous about smoking. And the Chacham Tzvi, in fact, smoked. But he never smoked. He didn't smoke on Yom Tov Rishon. I shouldn't say he never did, because I don't know if that's true. What's brought is that in Halacha is that he didn't smoke on Yom Tov Rishon, and he smoked on Yom Tov Sheni. So the world presumed that that was because the Yom Tov Sheni is Midrabbanan. But as I mentioned, the Halacha very specifically disallows that cheshbon. So I suggested a different pshat in the Chacham Tzvi. That, listen, he was a smoker. And it's uncomfortable for a smoker not to smoke. So he was used to not smoking 1 day a week from Shabbos. So 1 day he was able to put up with. So he didn't smoke the first day Yom Tov. By the second day Yom Tov already, this was really got on his nerves because he wasn't used to not smoking for 2 days, so he smoked. Now I say what I said, that I don't say that he never smoked on the first day Yom Tov. Lidaiti, for example, when Shavuos is this year, when Shavuos occurs on Sunday and Monday, is he talking that the Chacham Tzvi smoked on the first day of Yom Tov then too? I don't know for a fact that he didn't smoke on that day.
That made it Shavuot Chol Nefesh and have to now wait a second day, or that was considered?
I guess, in other words, he had a Shiloh. I presume the Shiloh was, listen, it's been a huge debate across all the Doros if smoking is permissible on Shabbos or not. So I presume the Pshat is that the first day Yom Tov wasn't such a big Tzorech, so he was Machmer. On the second day, Yom Tov was a real pain. So it just wasn't worth his while to be Machmer. It was worth his while to be Seimach and Tzadim that it's Mutter. That's the way I wanted to be Lemshat, the Chacham Tzvi. So al kolponem, so the era of Tavshilin is a heter, but it's a heter, it's a limited heter. It doesn't allow us to do everything that we want to do, whenever we want to do it. The cooking has to be done early enough in the day that we could still benefit from it on Yontif. Now, the Chofetz Chaim does cite in the Biur HaLocha, as I mentioned, the Ritzbah, I think one or two other shittas, Paskin, in fact, like Rav Chisda, that Tzorchei Shabbos and Nasim B'Yontif. So if you Tzorchei Shabbos and Nasim B'Yontif, then I could cook at the very last minute. So basically, the Chofetz Chaim does not really want to be Samech on those shittas, because I said there are a very, very small minority of Paskim and the Rishonim that hold that way. But pretty much, if a person won't have what to eat on Shabbos, so he allowed someone, you know, to do some cooking on that basis. You know, but the question is, if it was to have another dish, he certainly wouldn't have allowed, you know, a person to do that based on Tzorchei Shabbos, Nasim B'Yontif. Now, the principle of Hoyil, as I said, is a broad principle. And it touches many, many other aspects of Hilchos Yontif. Right at the beginning of Hilchos Yontif, and it's in Siman Tov Tzadikei, and it's probably just about the first Rabbi Akiva Eiger in Hilchos Yontif, maybe even the very first. So we have a similar shaila. The shaila is, am I allowed to do malocha, for example, Bein Hashmoshes, between the first day and the second day of Yontif? Now, when we look at Bein Hashmoshes, we have three different perspectives what Bein Hashmoshes could be. Bein Hashmoshes could be that it's all part of the daytime, it's one tzad. It could be a tzad, it's all part of the nighttime. And there's yet a third possibility, that somewhere, unknown, X, along the way, it switches from day until night. So that means if I'm doing melacha during Bein Hashmoshes, I'm cooking during Bein Hashmoshes, for example. So it could be the time that I'm cooking is part of yesterday, and the time that I'm eating is part of tomorrow, so there's no heter of hoyil. So that's the point that Rabbi Akiva Eiger makes, that during the period of Bein Hashmoshes, we have to be very careful about doing melacha because of the fact that there's no din of hoyil. And in fact, I may be doing it at a point which is yesterday, and I may be using the results of that melacha at a point that's tomorrow. So I discussed this once with Rabbi Yosher Zatzal, and had a very, very interesting perspective. He said, for example, let's say it's Bein Hashmoshes, and I want to carry a sefer to shul with me. I want to carry a sefer to shul with me. So he said that that's mutter to do, even Bein Hashmoshes. Why? He said, since at any second I could actually use the sefer, I could open up the sefer and learn at any second that I'm carrying it. So instantly. So therefore, he said there's a heter of hoyil. That to be the raisa is no isa. Because hoyil and mikloa, hoyil, if you want to learn, you can stop any second you want to look at the sefer and learn. So it's instantly available to you. So a meila, there's no isa deraisa in carrying it. If there's no isa deraisa, it's a suffix derab. So then the only question is of miyof or yontif lechavero midarabonon. Midarabonon, it could be samech to be meikol. That's suffix derabonon the kula. That's the perspective that he took. So that's another example of where hoyil plays a very, very significant role in the halacha. It is not only relegated to Erev Tavshilin. What's stunning when you speak to a giant of the halacha is that all the svaras, all the things we think about, even if we're on the straight and true with the way we're thinking, but where exactly they fit into halacha, it's amazing how it's worked out for them. But they've learned so intensively and so thoroughly that they know exactly where each part of the halacha, how it fits together. So I once wanted to know, for example, let's say I cannot do something on Shabbos without incidentally doing a malach. Now, for example, let's say I want to take hot water out of the tap. when I take hot water out of the tap, some more water flows in. Now, normally under most circumstances, it is bishul immediately because the water in the hot water tank is hot and the new water coming in is cold. And I take out a cup or two of hot water, so some more cold water, a small amount of cold water mixes in with a large amount of hot water, and it gets instantly cooked. It becomes instantly yad soledus. So now, do I have to be concerned with that on Yom Tov? That when I take out water, I'm cooking more water. The more water that I'm cooking, I'm not using. I'm using the water that I am cooking. Or can I say that, listen, that's also the cooking on Yom Tov that's being done is also the Tzarech Yom Tov. Why? Because I couldn't take out this water without cooking the other water. So the fact that the other water cooks is also a Tzarech Yom Tov. It's a cute svar. And I know that Rav Nissen Alpert Zatzal once explored this svar. So I asked Rav Yoshev about this. So he gave me an answer. I'll tell you in a moment. And it took me, it was long afterwards, that I discovered whatever the Rav Shulchan Aruch, which sugya and Be'er Masechet Be'er it came from. It was nothing, you know, it's nothing, it just wasn't misvar that he thought that way. It was rooted in a sugya and Masechet Be'er. So he told me the following. He said, as long as you could still conceivably use that water during the daytime, during Yom Tov itself, so then you can be samech on the fact that you can't do take the water out without the other water being cooked. That's if it's in combination then with the din of hoyo. So if I put it, it's early enough, if it's not near the end of the day of Yom Tov, so I could use the water in one of two ways without cooking the water. The easiest way would be I could have, for example, a goy open up the water faucet for me. And psikresha by an akum is mutter, so the fact that more water is going to cook is not of no consequence in that. And I can use all the hot water that's in the hot water boiler at that point in time. I'll open all the faucets in the house for some reason and I'll use all the water. So, you know, that's 30, 40 gallons, it's not unlimited. So I couldn't, in fact, use it on Yom Tov. And then I had my more creative bent, I had a way to do it also. And that if you know how a hot water boiler works in a storage tank, you can close the intake. And then open the drain and take water out from the bottom so you can drain without, you don't need it. To make water come upstairs in your house, you need the new water to come in. Because why does the water rise when gravity pulls everything down in this world? The reason is because of the water pressure. The water pressure that's going into the tank from the main is strong enough to push the water up. And that's, I don't understand fully the theory of water. But that's why you have water tanks. And even in Hempstead, there's a famous water tank that's high up there and on the way to the mountains. In Goshen, a couple of places, you have these. So the water pressure will rise as high as the water tank. So that's why I make it very high. So even if there's a multi-story building in the city, the water pressure suffices to push it up to the level where it started. That's the theory. That's how it works. So normally you need it to push it up, but if you just close the intake and you open the drain on the bottom, so you can take out all the hot water from the bottom of the thing without making new hot water.
Do that on Shabbos also?
On what?
Can you close the
if you close the intake, yeah, just take water out from the drain on the bottom. You could do such a thing, you know. That you could do. It's not just so comfortable. They're going to put a little pail under there and drain it out little by little, but you could do it. There's no Easter in such a case. I'll call upon him. So he told me only together with Hoyle. So I discovered eventually in the Rav Shulchan Aruch, where this comes from, that the question that the Gemara discusses and the Rav Shulchan Aruch goes into is what happens if these soldiers that come to the town and they have to quarter the soldiers and they can only shecht for themselves if they're first going to shecht for the soldiers. Otherwise, they won't be able to shecht for themselves. So could they say that I can shecht, you know, 10 behemoths, and they'll take 9, and I'll take 1, and Ramayla, I'll have 1. Or I can't, in other words, is there no het to the shecht? Because sof kol sof, In other words, my whole het of the shecht is, if don't take the 9th, let me take the 10th. Otherwise, so what's the het? You're not allowed to do malacha for a guy. But here it's for my tzarech, because I'll be able to shecht for myself. Or I'll get... So if it was one behemoth, it wouldn't be such a problem, because I'll take, if I'm shechting, as long as I'm taking part, it's one shechit of everybody. So the Rav Shulchan Aruch says, if it's possible that I could take any of the behemoths that I want for myself, in other words, I have to give them meat, but which behemoth I have to give them is not dictated by them. So I can, any one that I want, I can shecht and take for myself. So Rav Eli says, once there's a heter of hoyo, then this svar that I can't have what I want without it comes into play. In other words, it's a lesser tzarech yontif. And when we're dealing only with the Issa Darabonon, if the hoyo removed the Issa Darabonon, we could be soymech on that as well. So this is just a number of examples, Rabbi Yisai, where hoyo plays a very, very significant role in Hilchas Yontif. It's in a way a very esoteric concept, and one that we don't usually bump into directly, and that is because of the fact that hoyo is not a flat-out matter. Hoyo sets the stage for something else to be matter always. So therefore, we're not used to thinking in terms of hoyo and Hilchas Yontif, because it's in the background. But once we start to look into the background, we see that Hoyol has a very, very strong and significant influence on Hilchas Yontif, and that's why I wanted to discuss it tonight. Guten Rabbi Yisai.